Earth and Sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. I'm Jorge Salazar. How would the rest of nature fare without the constant pressure that we, the human species, place upon our shining blue planet? This intriguing question is explored by science writer and journalist Alan Wiseman. Wiseman is the author of The World Without Us, an exhaustively researched account of what it would be like if the human footprint were to one day crumble and disappear. Here is Alan Wiseman. Welcome to Earth and Sky.
Thank you. A pleasure. I'm a great fan.
Thank you. So, yeah, tell me a little bit more about this book. What you were hoping to discover and answer in The World Without Us?
Well, years ago, I did a story for Harper's Magazine at Chernobyl. And in the course of looking at the devastation of the reactor, I noticed how in the abandoned villages around the nuclear plant that despite the levels of radioactivity that forced human beings away, nature was rushing in. The landscaping was overtaking the houses. Hedges were growing wild. Tree roots and even flower roots were starting to break up the pavement. And years later, a magazine editor at Discover Magazine suggested to me, you know, why don't you write about what would happen if people abandon everywhere? And I thought that, well, that wasn't too likely. I mean, if we were to go extinct, we'd probably do it the slow, agonizing way, the way that most other species have done it, and the way some fear we're already doing it and drag a lot of other species with us. But she said, no, let's just suppose that, you know, for whatever reason, human beings just disappeared tomorrow. And you know, there are a couple of remote possibilities how that would happen. Some people believe in raptures, be they by religious figures or by space aliens. But certainly there's a potential for some Homo sapiens-specific virus just to go after us. But assume just for the moment that we are gone from everywhere. How would the rest of nature wake up tomorrow without our constant pressures that we heap on it daily? How would it fare without us? What have we set in motion that it would still have to contend with, such as the amount of carbon that we've loaded into the atmosphere? How long would it take for it to die down? Could it possibly wipe out all our traces? And if so, what would the mechanisms be? How long would it take, for example, to reduce some formidable hunk of human infrastructure like Manhattan back to a forest? Would it be the same forest that it was when Henry Hudson first saw it? Have we done anything that's totally indelible, ranging from some of our more disturbing things like our radioactive wastes or all this plastic that we have invented and inserted into the ecosystem, to some of our more beautiful things, our artwork, our greatest examples of human expression, from symphonies to our prayers even. Are we immortal in some ways? But mostly, how would this planet fare without us? It's kind of a way, by theoretically just wiping us off the planet, to get a much clearer idea of what else is here. And it turns out our planet would do really, really well. It would really flourish without us around.
Of all the places that you visited in researching The World Without Us, what really struck you with the feeling that that this is what the world would be like without humans?
Well, you know, the world is a varied place with lots of different ecosystems, from the, you know, high Arctic to the torrid equator. And I traveled around the world looking at a lot of these places. And in every climatic zone, there are still some places that give you a glimpse of what, you know, the local Eden was, shall we say. My first stop was the last fragment of primeval forest in Europe. It's on the Polish-Belarusian border. It was preserved as a game refuge by a 14th-century Lithuanian duke who became the king of Poland, and then a series of Polish kings and then Russian czars kept it that way thereafter. It's that forest that you see in your mind's eye when you hear Grimm's fairy tales when you're a kid. It's rather extraordinary. It's the same trees that a lot of us who grew up in temperate regions in North America or Europe or Asia are used to, except gigantic versions of them with huge curtains of moss hanging down from them. Enormous trees, ash trees that go up over 150 feet and pine trees even higher, and wolves baying, and even animals you wouldn't even expect to see in Europe, like bison, live in there. It was extraordinary to see it for two reasons. One, just because of what I've described, but the second is that it didn't feel exotic to me. It somehow felt complete. When I went in there, it was, my body just sort of responded and said, yes, you know, we have a memory within us of what this world was when it was fresh and new, and it's perhaps on some cellular level, but it's really there. And it was extraordinarily exciting to feel what it's like to be in something that pristine. And there are places like this in all ecosystems that still exist.
You've raised the possibility that that humans can continue to be part of the ecosystem, I guess, and perhaps even feel like they're part of the ecosystem, as you've described, you know, in a way that is much more in balance with the rest of the planet. In your estimation, how connected are humans to their ecosystem?
We have become, in some ways, extremely distant from our ecosystem. We wall ourselves off away from it, and we surround ourselves with noisy machines that kind of drown out the sounds of nature. It's very hard to hear just pure sounds of nature almost anywhere on the planet these days. We have developed sort of this barrier between us and it out there, and yet we are still mammals. We have become so technologically proficient as human beings over the past 300, 400 years or so, that we have begun to use energy in a much more concentrated way than energy is used naturally by nature. And as a result, we're starting to tip the balance of certain processes. We've become like, well, I liken us in the book in a couple of different instances. I explain what the historic role of ice sheets have been and the historic role of volcanoes have been. We're sort of alternately a volcano or an ice age ourselves in the kind of global impact that we can have on the ecosystem. But yet we are still subject to the same vulnerabilities of any other mammal or any other creature. And one is that if we eat ourselves out of house and home, just like what happens to a locust or what happens to coyotes or what happens to any other animal that grows too numerous for its ecosystem or for its resource base, population is going to crash. And that's going to happen to human beings someday. And even though I don't really address this issue very much until the very end of the book, ultimately I suggest that all our good efforts to try to consciously improve our behavior so we do things more cleanly and so we have less of an impact on the planet and so our, quote, footprint is a little smaller, all of those can only provide a limited amount of improvement to the situation that we find ourselves in if our numbers are so great. And even if you and I were to reduce our carbon output to the planet by 100-fold, the fact that, you know, there's a million more people on the planet every 4 days is going to wipe out our accomplishment rather quickly.
I imagine a lot of people, as you say, they stay up late and they start thinking about things, and they start thinking about what's going to be here after I'm gone, you know, and maybe looking at the big picture. What do you think that will be humanity's most enduring legacy, you know, in the eyes of those who find an Earth without humans?
Well, I think you're right. A lot of people do wonder about the future, and that's why I wrote The World Without Us, about what things would be like, not now, but beyond us. Everybody seems very intrigued about it, and it sort of takes away the, you know, the fear factor of, oh my God, all these environmental crises, are we all going to die? You know, I just sort of assume in the beginning, well, something happened, we're all dead, but we get to sit around through my book and watch to see what happens next. What do I think will happen? You know, as you well know, someday, 5 billion plus years from now, the sun will expand and the Earth will be a glimmer. But during the next 5 billion years, I think that there's still, ultimately, the human race will go because every species goes extinct. I would like to think that we will hang on for a long time because in many ways we are flourishing. just think of the arts that we have created just over the past few hundred years. Even as we're creating industrial messes, we're also writing the symphonies of Beethoven, the music of Gershwin, our great poetry of Whitman, of the great films that we have produced, Renoir. Towards the end of the book, I look at some of these beautiful human accomplishments to wonder, you know, will any echo of us remain in the universe? And it turns out some of it will. A lot of those images have been collected and recorded and appended to our Voyager and Pioneer spacecraft that are now out there in interstellar space, and they are carrying this wonderful human legacy off, and until they get reduced to space dust billions of years from now, they'll be out there, and whether something finds them or not, we'll probably never know that, but there's just something about it, the fact that our spirit is still intact, that I find really gratifying. The fact that our radio emanations, including this conversation, will just go out and keep expanding into the universe. It will become more and more diffused, but in some little photonic way, it will still be there. And some very sensitive, highly intelligent civilization out there might hear our words. That's something to think about.
That was Alan Wiseman, author of the book The World Without Us. I'm Jorge Salazar for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.